This episode is brought to you by Mubi, a curated streaming service dedicated to elevating great cinema from around the globe. From iconic directors to emerging auteurs, there was always something new to discover. With Mubi, each and every film is hand-selected, so you can explore the best of cinema, streaming anytime, anywhere. Like Pavements, Alex Ross Perry's rockumentary biopic hybrid about the only band that matters, Pavement. Starring members of the band, as well as Joe Keery, Jason Schwartzman, and Tim Heidecker, the wildly original picture tackles the mythology of the band, their anticipated comeback, and more in a fashion that matches their left-field ethos. To stream Pavements and other great films, you can try Mubi free for 30 days at mubi.com/COS. That's mubi.com/COS for a month of great cinema for free. This episode is brought to you by Mubi, presenting the new film, Lurker. The razor-sharp directorial debut from The Bear and Beef writer-producer Alex Russell, the film follows 20-something Los Angeles retail clerk and loner Matthew, who encounters Oliver, a rising pop star, and takes the opportunity to edge his way into the in-crowd. But staying there isn't easy. Hailed by IndieWire as a transfixing tale of LA obsession gone awry, and by Vogue as one of the best movies of the year, Lurker is an exhilarating take on the music industry, the blurred line between friend and fan, and our universal search for validation. Lurker is now streaming exclusively on Mubi. To stream Lurker and other great films, you can try Mubi for free for 30 days at mubi.com/COS. That's mubi.com/COS for a month of great cinema for free.
Hello, everyone out there in podcast land. This is Westy from the rock band Pavement.
Hey, this is Spiral Stairs from Pavement.
And the Pavement's movie, the story behind the song. And that's what we're getting into, the little bit of Kennel D. Roop, roop, roop.
I have a very special bonus surprise episode for you today. I have the guys from the great band Pavement. I have Scott Canberg and Steve West. Gentlemen, how are you guys doing?
I'm doing good.
Great.
Excellent. Where are you both calling in from today?
I am calling from Melbourne, outside of Melbourne, Australia, in the future.
Wow.
Oh, you're ahead of us. And I'm from Virginia in the wild country of Virginia.
Okay. All parts of the world. That's what we have here. And I'm on the West Coast. So we got it all going on here. Thanks, guys, for joining us on this one. This will be fun. We're going to be talking about one of your great songs from the 30th anniversary album, Wowie Zowie, Kennel District. We'll also talk about the movie, which is, I don't even know how you describe the movie, but it's a great movie called Pavements that you can see streaming on Mubi right now. And we'll get into it a little bit because it's a documentary, but it's not. It's a satire and spoof, but it's a little bit of all of the above. So I'm very curious to see how that all happened too. But first, you know, let's talk and dig right into it. Let's get into your 30th anniversary. And before we even get into the song Kennel District, and curious how you guys chose that song, tell us a little bit about just the background of how you guys all formed your band. One of the most influential indie bands, and you know, back in the day, I certainly was there listening to your music.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for that. You know, without people like you listening, it would have been, we would have just been another has-been, you know, rock band in the history of rock bands. But I mean, we, you know, we started in 89 and Westy came along in 93, taking over for the late Gary Young, and has been our rock for, you know, since then. West and Malcolmus made up most of Crooked Rain in New York, and we were, that's kind of where the story of Kennel District kind of starts, because we recorded a, we tried to record a version of it around the Crooked Rain record. We put it out on a version of that on the Crooked Rain, not Sorted Sentinels, but whatever the name of the Crooked Rain reissue thing is. There's a version of, an early version of Kennel District on there, and basically made it up and in New York while we were recording Crooked Rain. And then we ended up revisiting it again in when we went to Memphis to record at Easley Studios to record Wowie Zowie. So that's kind of a short history of it. I mean, there's a lot of deep meanings to it and stuff, but if you want to know more about it, I could tell you more, but it's a good story.
That's why we're here, guys. Story behind the song.
True. Well, right. That's what it is, right? Like a lot of my songs, I was very shy to record a song. I mean, Steve had so many songs in the well, and they were so great, and we just tried to get through them all. And then there was moments at the end of each record where I was like, all right, I've got this song. And so Kennel District was kind of one of those. And West kind of comes in with a really great signature. His signature drum beats is perfect
Skippy.
for that song, because it's kind of the same four chords. And then you've got this kind of, I guess it's like a Pixies kind of Nirvana kind of thing, where it's just verse, chorus, verse. The lyrics were kind of about my girlfriend at the time, who then became my wife and now is my ex-wife. And also about this woman that I met in New York around the time of Crooked Rain, who was married to a like an Americana rock star. I won't say his name, but she was divorcing him because he would beat the shit out of her. So yeah, it's a pretty dark, it's a poppy song, but it's got some dark undertones to it.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, the way you were describing it and the kind of the dark genesis of it, because just looking at the lyric sheet and it's, over and over again, the why didn't I ask? Why didn't I ask?
Yeah, I mean, that's, life's big questions,
Yeah, there's a lot of those moments in life where you say to yourself, why didn't I ask?
Oh yeah, no question about it. I had several of those today. So, Scott, do you remember when you first had the idea of that song, and whether it was a lyric first, whether it was a melody first? Take us back to that.
I think we were just kind of playing around and came up with that little keyboard melody. Luckily, we remembered it for the Wowie Zowie record, because I would have I don't do you remember, West? Like, what did we do? Like, how did we revisit the song? I can't remember.
I don't remember. I just remember you playing the basic bass line thing and playing to that. But I wondered what you played that keyboard part on and what instrument it was that you played, because that really makes the song.
Yeah. I think originally we just played whatever was there, like a Moog or something. And then I think when we went to Easley, they had some cool synthesizer or something we played, and then now, when we play live, Steve plays it on guitar, and Rebecca plays the that part too. So that sounds really, really big, and it's,
Nice and full.
yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's just kind of, I didn't really have at that time, like I said, it was hard to compete with the old Malk, and I tried to keep my songs as simple and fast as possible so we could at least record them. And if I had to do it over, I might remix it or re-sing it. If I, I remember Matador saying once for that song Date with IKEA, they were like, can you go and re-record the vocals? We want to put it out as a single. And I'm like, oh, I don't think so.
Oh, tough guy.
The fact that the label wanted you to record your vocals again, and that's not your style, right? It's not Pavement style.
I mean, they were right in the end. It could be sung a lot better, but yeah, that wasn't our style. Our style was just basically what we did, we put out, and we tried to make the best of it and moved on. And I think people like that, from us. And it could always be better, but I don't know. That's the hindsight, right? The original version of Kennel District is like on the one that's on Crooked Rain reissue is hard to listen to the way I sing, because I'm really out of tune. So it must have just been a quick take, and luckily we'd never put that out on an actual record. Have you heard it, West?
No, I didn't even know we did it. So, I've never heard it.
It sounds like your process, it wasn't really a process. It's you were, you know, when you're talking about songwriting and doing all that sort of thing, is it more like you guys, you pick up your instruments and just start kind of playing around and then something strikes you?
West was living in New York with Malcolmus, and they were kind of running through songs. But then when we got to the studio, we all kind of were there for Wowie Zowie. And that was a strange one, because it was those guys had recorded a bunch of tracks in New York. I don't know, where was that you guys, was it at the old
Walleyes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we had those songs, and I think we re-recorded a few of them, but then we ended up recording, you know, half of the record is like kind of the band actually recording them there in Memphis as a band. And so it was kind of, it's a strange way to, I guess in those days, it was kind of a strange way to do a record, but we pulled it off, you know. Oh, how?
A little haphazard. But.
Yeah, I'm not going to tell you who you guys are, obviously, but from somebody who appreciates your music, it's very much authentic to who you guys are. At least that's what it seems like, you know, very organic. It's not like overly rehearsed.
I mean, that record was cool, because we had Davis McCain and Doug Easley were the engineers, you know, they kind of made sure everything was sounding great. And then, of course, Bryce Goggin he had the task of putting it all together and mixing it all. And
yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, we just kind of got lucky that the songs were good. And Pavement was always kind of like, we just kind of threw stuff against the wall and see what stuck. And we still worked really hard to make sure that it all kind of sounded good, you know.
When you went into the studio, did you already know which songs would be on Wowie Zowie, as an example? Like, was there a process to any of that where you guys had an agreement of a certain number of songs or anything like that? Or how would you describe it?
We had been touring a lot for Crooked Rain, and we knew some of the Wowie Zowie songs that we had played live. So definitely when we went in there and played and recorded those songs, we kind of knew that we all knew how to play them to a degree. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, okay, that's great, but we've got like another 40 minutes or whatever. If you're making a big long album like Wowie Zowie, we would just keep recording. So yes, we did, because we knew how to play at least six of those songs from live, and we all did that together. And then Scott had his song that I just found out we had done earlier, Kennel D. And maybe Steven had one or two other things that he might have played for me at some point, but I didn't really know. And so you just kind of put it all together and see what happens. And that was Wowie Zowie.
And when you throw it all together like that and you guys are in the studio, do you remember kind of what the sessions were like there? Was that an easy process for that particular album?
Yeah, we would go through it pretty quick. You know, run two or three times through the song and then move on. And, you know, try to get three or four songs done a day and then go back when you realize you've listened to it in your brain, you've heard it all night long, and you're like, I can play that better again. And so then you take another take or something. So that was kind of our loose way of handling it. And if there was something that we knew could be better, we'd go back specifically and try to make it better, one way or the other.
Yeah, but it was, you know, like most of our recording sessions, I mean, even Terror Twilight to a certain degree, it was kind of, we're just like a gang of friends. And, you know, we went out and we ate really amazing food, because, you know, Mark Eibold was like would tell us where to go. And we went to the, I don't know, Memphis was like, what, it was the Grifters town, right? So we hung out with the Grifters, and I think GBV came and played a show.
They played. We went out one night
recording.
Yeah.
That was really fun. And so there's always kind of like these cool memories of when we recorded records. You know, there's always shit that happened and, you know, great memories. And it's, you know, it's kind of cool that we're all still around and we still kind of get to experience that in our new shows.
Right. You know, I think it's important when you're recording a record to have an atmosphere that you're in where everyone in the band is kind of jonesing or relaxing or working in the same kind of bubble, you know, enjoying the city or the studio, whether it's a real tight, like knit super studio or more relaxed studio with tons of instruments and everything, chords are all over the place. And I think in the gamut of Pavement, we did all of those different studios. Super loose engineers to really tight ass working dudes making everything sound great. And you can hear it in every album.
You can hear the different personalities.
Sure. And the atmospheres.
Yeah, each of our records are different that way, you know, and it's pretty interesting.
So do you, when you look back at it that way and you were talking about like some guys are really loose and some were really uptight and super strict, which looking back do you think was better for you, or which do you think brought out what you really wanted to bring out?
I think they all brought it out really in different ways, you know, like
yeah.
None of it was really negative, you know, it was all positive because the songs all you know got made and put on record and
30 years later,
yeah,
like we're talking yeah. about, which is pretty cool. It's got to be cool to look back, you know, 30 years from that album, and that was album number 3.
Yeah.
And this is just rolling in from, you know, you had albums number 1 and 2, you had the song, one of your most well-known songs, Cut Your Hair. You're coming into the studio with these songs. When you have 2 under your belt and you've achieved the success that you guys had, is there a different feeling going into the studio for album number 3? Like, is there a different goal you had for it compared to the other ones?
I don't think so. I mean, yeah, I mean, we, you know, originally on that record, I wanted to kind of keep it just a, you know, a 12-song record or something, or a 10-song record, keep it kind of chugging along like a typical record. And so Steve and I kind of we had a little disagreements about it, and he won out, luckily, because it's, you know, it's a sprawling 18 song record with what I like to say it was a record and its B-sides all in one. So the reissue, or as they say in the movie, the reissue before the reissue. Going into it, that was my mindset, you know, because I kind of would do a lot of editing and a lot of, you know, the order of the records, the song order. And Steve wanted this one to be kind of just all over the place. And it's kind of cool that it was, you know, in retrospect, because we went back to the normal way of doing it for the last 2 records. I don't know. I don't know what we were doing at that time. I think we were just touring a lot and just trying to kind of figure it all out. We didn't really have any pressure, except for we did take that record to, what was it, Atlantic? I think Danny Goldberg was the president. We had a meeting. We had a meeting with him, and he kind of looked at us and said, like, this is the record? You know, he said, you know, like, really? Like, this isn't gonna win any awards, or I don't know what he said, but he just kind of laughed. And Gerard Cosley was there, and he was kind of sticking up for us. And
Gerard is one of the main yeah. guys at Matador. Yeah.
We kind of knew that that was
A dagger. You
know, it wasn't going to be as big as Crooked Rain, and
yeah,
MTV that wasn't going
to. Oh, the first nail in the coffin.
Yeah, and, yeah, and then we played
Lollapalooza. You know, Lollapalooza.
It wasn't really like a big, you know, the songs weren't like big crowd pleasers at that time. I mean, maybe our fans who were way up in the
yeah.
in the cheap seats liked them, but the whole fans and the Cypress Hill fans weren't really into, you know, Extradition.
Right.
Do you want to mention Lollapalooza? You know, that whole experience that you guys had?
It was great. I mean, it started off a little rough, you know, like I don't think we were really prepared for that kind of environment. We'd never really played those kind of shows before. So it was a little, it took a little bit of time to find our feet there, but all of the other bands were great.
Yeah.
And really supportive. And it was a super fun time, you know, except for getting, you know, mud thrown at us and
yeah, a little aggro, and,
but you know what, you know, I don't know. That's what happened in the '90s, right? You threw mud at people.
That's got to be a wild experience when you're on stage and that happens, but
yeah, I guess. I mean, I'm surprised it didn't happen more.
But you're young guys too, and like, you know, so this is all going on and you're playing your music, and so it's part of the overall experience. Easy for me to say.
Yeah, I mean, you knew it was going to happen. They were, you know, they were watering down. They like had big hoses out there.
It was hot.
Were watering down the crowd, and it was just like,
uh-oh. Take it out on these people in front of us that we don't know. Who the hell is this band? They suck.
Yeah.
And they just, you know, just might as well throw some mud at them.
Yeah.
Which we, you know, we're very fortunate because out of that, we've gotten a lot of mileage out of that scenery. Yeah. Nobody really got hurt. So that's a good thing.
They made a movie about it.
Yeah, we got it filmed.
For sure, it's part of the lore, which is just one of so many different anecdotes about you guys that makes it really interesting. Like, that's authentic to who you are. We're going to take like a very quick break, and then I want to get into I don't know if you call it a documentary, but I'll let you guys describe it. We'll get into the movie a little bit, and then I want to get a little bit more into just what you guys are up to today. But we'll be right back with Steve and Scott from the great band Pavement.
This episode is brought to you by MUBI, a curated streaming service dedicated to elevating great cinema from around the globe. From iconic directors to emerging auteurs, there was always something new to discover. With MUBI, each and every film is hand-selected, so you can explore the best of cinema, streaming anytime, anywhere. Like Pavements, Alex Ross Perry's rockumentary biopic hybrid about the only band that matters, Pavement. Starring members of the band, as well as Joe Keery, Jason Schwartzman, and Tim Heidecker, the wildly original picture tackles the mythology of the band, their anticipated comeback, and more in a fashion that matches their left-field ethos. To stream Pavements and other great films, you can try MUBI free for 30 days at MUBI.com/COS. That's MUBI.com/COS for a month of great cinema for free. This episode is brought to you by MUBI, presenting the new film, Lurker. The razor-sharp directorial debut from The Bear and Beef writer-producer Alex Russell, the film follows 20-something Los Angeles retail clerk and loner Matthew, who encounters Oliver, a rising pop star, and takes the opportunity to edge his way into the in-crowd. But staying there isn't easy. Hailed by IndieWire as a transfixing tale of LA obsession gone awry, and by Vogue as one of the best movies of the year, Lurker is an exhilarating take on the music industry, the blurred line between friend and fan, and our universal search for validation. Lurker is now streaming exclusively on MUBI. To stream Lurker and other great films, you can try MUBI for free for 30 days at MUBI.com/COS. That's MUBI.com/COS for a month of great cinema for free.
All right, we are back. So, I like to see it. Scott, for those of you who are not watching, Scott's picking up his guitar. Go ahead, Scott. No, please.
Trying to learn television solos.
Oh, good.
Or actually, I'm rehearsing for our big Mexico City show coming up next week. Have you been practicing, West?
No, I've been slacking off, man.
At this point in your lives, do you know each other so well that there's no need to practice, or you just like you go on stage and it's like riding a bike?
Yeah, parts of it are, but we need to practice. Or I do, and you know, I'm sure West is probably the guy that's practiced the most of any of us, I'm sure. The reunion shows have been absolutely amazing because he's rehearsed so much. I mean, I feel like I've rehearsed, but then when you get together with everybody and you start playing the song, it's like, oh no, like, you know,
yeah,
But then you play, when the more shows you play, the more comfortable you get. I mean, it's, you can't, it's, it is like riding a bike, but it's like, you know, you need the training wheels for a little bit of time before you really feel comfortable. But Mexico City is our, it's our first show there. And so we're playing, you know, pretty much we've, Bob sent us the set list and it's kind of, you know, the songs we're more comfortable with than any of them. I'm not sure. Is Kennel District on there?
Yeah, it is. It's like a third or fourth song. Okay. Fourth song.
I don't really need to practice that one, but
maybe you're working on getting in tune with the singing. Ooh.
Oh, right. Yeah. That's my problem.
So how is it after all these years getting back on stage together? Is it something, is it fun to be playing live together again? How would you describe it just for yourselves?
Personally, for me, it's great. It's, I love it. It's because, you know, the songs are great and the fans are great and my band members are great. You know, it's just like, it's really, it's a fun experience.
Yeah. I think it's kind of like a circus where, you know, there's parts where the clowns come out and then the lions are out there at other times.
Yeah.
And the elephants come out, and the guy in the middle talking to you comes out, and it's very unpredictable, but predictable at the same time. But you really don't know how. There could always be, you know, a moment where you skip up, and that's when it gets interesting and fun. It's just fun. It's great.
There's a lot to talk about, but I do want to ask you about the movie because you know, I've watched the movie. My daughter watched it with me. She's a hardcore music person, and it's just, how would you describe what the movie is?
I don't know.
For those of you who haven't seen it, who are listening and watching this, you got to go check it out because there are a lot of movies that are biopics and documentaries about musicians and artists and. This is like nothing that I've ever seen before. It's fascinating. But so I'll let you guys describe how you would describe this film.
Well, I would describe it as a little bit of the Wowie Zowie, where it's got a little bit of everything going on and there's a lot of depth to it where you can watch it, which I have fortunately or unfortunately many times. And each time I see something different that Alex Ross Perry and Robert Greene put into the movie through their editing and the audio as well. So it's kind of epic in that way. It's fresh. It's not too Hollywood and it's not too too rudimentary or anything, but it's not too over the top. It's just got a little bit of everything. And
for me, what I really got out of it, besides all of the crazy storylines and stuff that Alex, I mean, Alex asked us, you know, we emailed or we talked to him on the phone back in like 2019, I think. And he was asking us, you know, about our experiences with Pavement and stuff. And that was kind of it, you know, like he went on and made this movie. I mean, luckily we got, you know, we had some shows to kind of integrate into it. But for me, like, it just kind of, it made the songs take on a whole new life and how great the songs were and still are. You know, they make this musical, you know, that it's supposed to be fake, but it's, you know, is it really fake? You know,
it's real. It was real for 3 days or 2 or 3 days.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
It's daring, and it did it.
When are we going to get our Grammy?
You know, it gets boring if you just do the thing where the band gets together and why they got together and then why the band broke up. And, you know, that is a storyline that most documentaries have. But when it's kind of hidden in between, you can read into a lot of that stuff if you watch it enough and know the read about the band. But being hidden is more interesting to me, and it's on another level besides that regular documentary type thing.
Oh, it's at another. It's another. Another
it's
level.
It's another planet.
It's another planet. It's very. It's I'm not just saying this because I'm talking to you guys. Like, it's brilliantly Pavement. And I'm wearing this shirt because I truly watch so many movies. I've seen a lot of music films. It's pretty remarkable what you guys did here. So first of all, like, your stories are just awesome on their own. But the fact that there's a Broadway musical or an off-Broadway musical that actually was put together and all the love and attention that was put into that, I don't want to spoil the film. But and then there's an art museum, like you said, and it's all happening at the same time.
Yeah, they worked hard on it. They worked hard and they did a amazing job. I mean, it's I've probably seen it more than West has seen it, but every time I do see it, I see something new in it and get something get a chuckle out of it. And at the end of the day, it's like, you know, we were a pretty good band. We still are.
Boom.
I love to hear that. And cue applause on that one. But everybody, you can see that. You should go see that movie. It's on Mubi. I think it's exclusively streaming on Mubi, so you should check that out. And if you don't know Mubi, it's M-U-B-I. It's you know, people who love movies go to Mubi. It's cool. So tell me about, before we end, guys, I want to hear just, you're obviously touring. You're doing your reunion tour, which is very cool.
We just played a couple Texas shows, and we're playing in Mexico City on Day of the Dead. So that'll be really fun. And we're actually talking about next year doing some fun shows as well.
Do you have any new music that's going to be coming out?
Well, we don't have anything new. We just have the soundtrack for the movie, which we recorded a bunch of really great live tracks from the previous year's tour. And we've got a new greatest hits package that just came out because our label really wanted to capitalize on the Harness Your Hopes craze. So we have this like TikTok thing going on where all these kids love that song. I don't know if you noticed it, West, at the Texas shows, but we've got a whole new demographic of fans.
I didn't notice. I couldn't see.
18 to 24 year olds.
That's great.
The power of TikTok.
It's amazing.
And great music, you know, you put that together. Yeah. That's yeah. Very cool.
But, other than that, I mean, I'm the Pavement stuff just keeps chugging along. Hopefully one day we'll do a box set, or West and I have solo things we do. I'm just finishing up a new solo record in LA next week. And West, what are you doing?
I work with two different bands, Darlington Pear. I don't write the songs in that song. I just play that band. I play drums and I work with them when we record and practice every week and play shows. And Unmastered Masters, that I do write the songs with the other guys, and I'm finishing up our album, and we're going to press it as vinyl.
All right.
Congratulations.
Yeah, that's awesome. We're keeping creative here, one way or the other.
And then for both of you guys, who are you listening to? Who's really hitting you right now with music? It can be anybody. It can be new music. It can be...
La Femme. You know. La Femme is a... French band. We saw them in Austin, and they played the night before we played, and my wife and I have been fans of them for about 10 years now, and we got to see them play, and I went up to say, well, you guys were great, and they thought I was kind of creepy, but that was okay, because they were fabulous. I really liked it. They're kind of Stereo Lab-ish, and with a little more humor and a little more flam. I don't know, but they're really great, and I really enjoyed them.
Very cool.
Well, I like this Australian band, Royal Headache, a lot. I listen to them every day while I go jogging. And there's a new band from Austin that is really cool called The Point that opened up for us. In
The Point?
The Point, yeah. They're kind of an instrumental, crazy, jazzy.
Yeah, a little bit of everything.
Thing. Yeah, I like them.
Really good.
Very cool, guys. Listen, I really appreciate you both joining me on The Story Behind the Song. And I really urge everybody to check out, you know, the special compilation you have on the soundtrack for the film, the new film, Pavements, which you can see a movie, which is really cool. And just like seeing you live and hopefully seeing you come across into the States, also touring the States next year. But 30 years later, after Wowie Zowie, here we are, and it's fun to hear the stories. So thanks for joining.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by Mubi, a curated streaming service dedicated to elevating great cinema from around the globe. From iconic directors to emerging auteurs, there was always something new to discover. With Mubi, each and every film is hand-selected, so you can explore the best of cinema, streaming anytime, anywhere. Like Pavements, Alex Ross Perry's rockumentary biopic hybrid about the only band that matters, Pavement. Starring members of the band, as well as Joe Keery, Jason Schwartzman, and Tim Heidecker, the wildly original picture tackles the mythology of the band, their anticipated comeback, and more in a fashion that matches their left-field ethos. To stream Pavements and other great films, you can try Mubi free for 30 days at mubi.com/COS. That's mubi.com/COS for a month of great cinema for free. This episode is brought to you by Mubi, presenting the new film, Lurker. The razor-sharp directorial debut from The Bear and Beef writer-producer Alex Russell. The film follows 20-something Los Angeles retail clerk and loner Matthew, who encounters Oliver, a rising pop star, and takes the opportunity to edge his way into the in-crowd. But staying there isn't easy. Hailed by IndieWire as a transfixing tale of LA obsession gone awry, and by Vogue as one of the best movies of the year, Lurker is an exhilarating take on the music industry, the blurred line between friend and fan, and our universal search for validation. Lurker is now streaming exclusively on Mubi. To stream Lurker and other great films, you can try Mubi for free for 30 days at mubi.com/COS. That's mubi.com/COS for a month of great cinema for free.